You are listening to BensTorah.com.
The question of what was the Rabbeinu Shalom's halachic parameters for the mitzvah we had as Jews when it comes to our belief in what we call pure monotheism as it relates to our association to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the nature of our Kabbalah Solmach HaShemayim and the nature of our Isa of Avodah Zarah. We're first going to define with the Makaris tonight what were the expectations of Klal Yisrael, and then what we're going to do as we continue with this year for the next couple of sessions is understand how Chazal viewed, therefore, various world religions that emanated from Judaism, tried to copy us, tried to expand in the Gaiusha world some concepts of monotheism, Christianity being one example, Islam being another example, where they took many concepts from Judaism and as B'nai Noach tried to develop their own monotheistic religion. We're going to analyze, based upon Makaros, whether or not Christianity is looked upon as monotheism today, according to B'nai Noach Halacha, and whether or not Islam or the Muslims are looked upon as a monotheistic religion. And I'll say up front, you'll be surprised when we get to that section of the discussion with Hashem in the next couple of weeks, the different opinions that exist concerning that specific question. One halachic nafkamina, a very simple nafkamina, is first of all, you can enter into a church if it's a base of Avodah Zarah. That's one major question. And question number two is Islam looked upon as a monotheistic religion or is it looked upon also with as a polytheistic for various reasons we will explain according to some of Farshim. So you say to me, what difference does it make? We don't go into mosques. Their answer is we do go into mosques because the Maris HaMachpelah that we go into is an official mosque built by Arabs on top of the Ma'ara where the others are buried below. And depending upon whether or not you look upon Islam as monotheistic or idolatrous, there's enough halacha masa whether you're allowed to daven there or go in there. So we're going to get to all of these questions and you'll be surprised the amount of different shittas we find in the poskim, quite obviously when it comes to this. So first look at page number one of the Maram HaKamos, and we're going to go to the Aseres HaDibros, where the what I would call the first two Dibros Rishonos, the Anochi and Lo Yelecha of the Aseres HaDibros, was given special attention by the Rebbeinu Shel Mechved B'Yatzmo. There's a Gemara Makos that says that even though Klal Yisrael heard all the Aseres HaDibros from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there was special emphasis, the Gemara says, that Anochi v'lo yelecha mipi ha'gevura shamanum, which is interpreted to mean that the Rebbeinu Shem spent special attention in emphasizing and understanding and comprehending and defining the parameters of Anochi and Leilecha as it relates to these two mitzvahs in contradistinction to the other mitzvahs. We allowed Moshe to do most of the job and he didn't do it all by himself. So let's first look at the first two psukim, and after that we're going to go into the Ramban, who does a magnificent job in uptaiching, at least for Klal Yisrael, what is the mitzvah of our belief in monotheism. That's part number one of tonight's year. And part number two, according to the Ramban, how did the world make such a mistake after the Baruch Hashem created the world to all of a sudden go in an idolatrous way and forget the fact that the Baruch Hashem was the Borei Olam? These are questions that the Rishonim were very perturbed about. The first pasuk says, "Anoich Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeisicha Meretz Yisrael Mibeis Avodim." That's called the Mitzvah Asay of Anoich Hashem Elokecha. The Los Asay, a little more complicated. It says, "Lo Yilocha Elo Mechal Pana." You shouldn't have any other gods in front of me. It then says, "Lo Sasach Lo Hapesal V'Totemuna." You can't make any type of graven images, any type of physical objects that represent what you call false deities, Asher b'shmaim al shabaris mitachas, especially those who were nature worshippers, used to like to make statues that correspond to the gods of nature that they were worshipping. V'asher b'mayim asher mitachas l'aretz, or to gods and the waters below, you have no right to do things like this. Lo shistach v'lehem, you shouldn't bow down to them. Lo sa'avdim, you shouldn't worship them in any unique avodah processes that they're worshipped with. Ke'anoich Hashem alokecha, Kel Kana, Hashem says he's a jealous God. We'll see what that term means. Pokin avon avos albonim ashleisha v'rebeim l'sonai v'oyse chesed la'alofim la'ohavai u'l'shomrei mitzvaysai. So these are what we call the first two major psukim dealing with the asay and losasay as it relates to the parameters of monotheism. Now, in the Makaras I handed out tonight, I want you now to go immediately to page number 2. And I'm using the Ramban over here because the Ramban really does a magnificent job in trying to give us an understanding, a perspective of exactly how, in fact, we understand the mechanisms of what these psukim teach us. Anoch Hashem Elokecha is the mitzvah asay. So let's look first on 2a and see the Ramban's presentation concerning this specific mitzvah. So says the Ramban, 2a, Hadi b'hazeh mitzvah asay. Anoch Hashem Elokecha is one of the Taryag HaMitzvos. What he's doing is he's excluding the Bahag and other Rishonim who claimed that belief in God is too important to be just a mitzvah, either you believe or you don't believe, so he never counted belief in God as one of the Taryag mitzvahs, but the Ramban and the Rambam both disagree, and they claim it's a mitzvah asay. Amar noch Hashem Elokecha, Yorav Yitzav Asam, that Abba Shalom is teaching and commanding them, Sheyedu, that we should know who Hashem is, V'yaminu, and we should come to believe in God, Ki Yesh Hashem, that there's a God, who Elokim Lahem, who is basically your God, the God who judges you, who watches over you. And before I go further, I want to point out something quite interesting in the phraseology and the terminology of the Ramban. If you notice, he says, Yorav Yitzava Sheyedu V'yaminu. The Ramban in this context is basically copying the Rambam, where the Rambam says that perhaps unlike other religions in the world, where there's an expectation of blind belief, and therefore that's where it starts, that's where it ends, and don't ask any questions about it, that's what it is. And if you do ask too many questions, they brand you as a heretic and such. In Yahadus, both the Ram and the Ramban says is that we have a chiyuv in Anoch Hashem Elokecha Sheyedu V'yaminu, to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to investigate who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through different mechanisms, and through that Yediyas Elokim to then ultimately come to Amuna, to real belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam himself, in various places, in Maron Nevuchim, and in his Sefer Mitzvahs, and other Tzavim says, the way that a person develops Yediyas Hashem, to come to Amunas Elokis, comes from basically 3 to 4 sources. The 3 or 4 sources that he mentions is, first of all, Yediyas HaTorah. When you study Torah, you come to Yediyas Hashem through the studying of the Torah itself. The second form of coming to Yediyas Hashem is by studying natural law, looking at the beautiful universe. Marabu Masech Shom Kulam Bechach Masisa Malaares Kinyanecha. So that's another way of coming to Yediyas Elokim, and therefore creating your Amunas Elokis. The third mechanism mentioned by the Rambam and others, and the Ramban, is by studying history, world history, Jewish history. Our ability to survive, the Hashgacha Pratis that Rabbanu Shalom showed to the Avais and to Klal Yisrael. So therefore, studying historical phenomenon brings you to the Keichos of Yedias Elokis, which in turn brings us to Emuna. Those are the three major central pillars the Rambam mentions of how a person can develop a Yedias Elokim. So let's go back now into the Ramban inside. So says the Ramban the following. The Ramban says, when you say that through Yedias Hashem you come to an Emuna, what is the nature, what are the parameters of that Emunas Elokis that we're supposed to get to? Kloimar, number one, Hoiver Kadmo. We should realize the first thing that ever existed in the entire universe was the Rabbanu Shalom. He existed before anything else ever came into existence. There's no such thing as eternal natural law, which was a major philosophy in all other world religions up until the early 1900s. They believed that the cosmic universe was eternal, and therefore the fact that we're saying now there's a God who pre-existed the world and brought the world into existence, Yesh Ma'inu such, is a major principle which Jews have to believe in when it comes to our Emunas V'Dayos. Is the Hoiva HaKadmo Umeita Uhaya HaKol B'Chefetz. The Ribbono Shel Olam, with his own divine will and desire, brought the entire magnificent universe in which we live, the entire cosmos above and below, into existence as a result of the divine will of God. Via Cholos, the Ribbono Shel Olam has the omnipotence, the divine power to accomplish this incredible feat. And furthermore, Hulokim Lahem, Shechayavim L'Avodoso, since God brought us and everything into existence, He's our God, He's our judge, we have an obligation to worship Him as being the one who is our creator. The Omar, what's interesting and fascinating, the Ramban says, is the introductory case of knowing God that's used in the Aseret HaDibros. Because it says, what does it say? It says, "V'amar Hashem Sicha Meretz Mitzrayim," that Hashem took us out of Egypt. Ki Hotzasa Misham, the fact that Hashem was able to liberate us and get us out of Mitzrayim and give us the freedom that we ultimately achieved, Misham Torah Al Hamatzius, it shows us on the existence of God to interfere with what seems to be natural historical law and to change the reality. It shows you that the Metzius, so what happens in this world, is under the divine control of God, the whole physical existence, what happens below, ala chefetz. It shows you the desire of God is manifest. That's why I call God omnipotent. God could obviously, His potency, His power cannot be overturned by any other entity. Ki biyadia ubahashkachim imenu. It was through God's divine knowledge and divine supervision, which we call hashkacha pratis, yatzon bisham. It wasn't an accident that Paro and the Egyptian kingdom were all of a sudden accidentally hit by a bunch of plagues and calamities. And under that destroyed state, the Jews picked themselves up and grabbed money and ran. You know, people can make a whole story that, you know, that the Jews had a mazel, that somehow they had a major calamity is taking place. So he says, don't, on the contrary, Yetzias Mitzrayim shows us with the fine-tuning that it was done with Hashem's idea, God's knowledge, foreknowledge, with His divine providence, that we left Mitzrayim the way we left. Vigam Torah, and furthermore, says the Rambam, that the Yetzias Mitzrayim, with all its incredible miracles, Sholoi B'derech HaTorah, teaches us Al HaChidush, the fact that the world was created by God, that God can create natural law, manipulate natural law, direct natural law. Ki im kadma to olam, if the world, as the Goyim claimed, was an eternal entity that always existed, and either coexisted with God or before God, if you claimed it was an Olam Kadmon, which the Goyim did believe, Lo Yishtana Dov Mitivo. If this is an internal creation of God, the natural law would not change or be possible to be changed if you have eternal existence of natural laws from eternal matter that were not created. Its Tev would be of an eternal nature. V'Torah al HaYecholes. It also shows the divine power, how far God goes in his ability to control and manipulate nature. V'HaYecholes. And God's uniqueness in being able to manipulate the natural law and the world around us and exert his Hashkacha Pratis and control everything that goes on below and above shows Hashem's Yichud, his distinctiveness and his exclusivity. There's no other entity that ever demonstrated such powers, such understanding, such providence, and such capacities to do what the Ribbono Shel'Olam did. Ukamo Sha'amar, as the Pasuk ultimately says, Bavur Teda, that the whole purpose of the Makos and Mitzrayim was to teach us, Ki Ein Kamoni Bechalaretz. There's no other deity that exists in the universe exclusive of the Ribbono Shel'Olam with all the powers that he possesses. There's nothing duplicate. There's no other entity with those types of capacities. V'zetam. And this is the reason why the Ribbono Shel'Olam said, Asher Hotzeisicha, I am the God who took you out of Egypt. Ki heim ha-yodim ve'edim b'cholela. The Jews he was talking to were not hearing this as a tale from thousands of years ago. They know, they saw, they witnessed, they experienced firsthand all the things that happened to Klal Yisrael, all the makos, all the miracles of the Eser Makos, the miracles of the Mon in the Midbar, and Kriyas Yamsuf, and the Ananya Kavod, and the Mon, and the waters coming miraculously with the well of Miriam. They saw all these miracles, their Eidim B'chol Eile. Now what is the Ramban emphasizing over here? I want to just tell you a little important historical aside. Many, many years before the Ramban wrote his Perish on the Chumash, I mean, going back now to the Tekufa of the Ibn Ezra and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Kuzari. So Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Kuzari and the Ibn Ezra had the following discussion. What was the discussion? If you were the Ribbono Shel'Olam and you wanted to give your card of introduction to a people that you want to adopt as your chosen nation, or you want to literally introduce yourself to the world, which phenomenon is a greater phenomenon? Creating the world, Yesh V'Yayim, Ex Nihilo, or the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Mishinya Teva? If you had to make a choice, everybody would have said, creating a universe, Yesh V'Yayim, is a greater divine miraculous process than merely manipulating nature and literally freeing people from servitude and such. Of the two miracles, it should have said, but it didn't say that. He says, so why did the Ribbono Shel'Olam give the lesser of the two? So the answer that is ultimately given by the Ramban over here is a very simple answer. When it comes to Hashem being the Bayra Elamim, the fact of the matter is, even Adam HaRishon V'Chava never witnessed it, because they didn't come on the scene until Friday, after everything was already Muchan U'Mezumen L'Fanechem. So even by them, they didn't witness the incredible phenomenon of creation Yesh V'Yayim. They weren't sitting in some cosmic booth watching from a distance as the Ribbono Shel'Olam created the universe. So that would have been, once again, secondhand information. And it's powerful, but you can always say, well, are we being given the truth? When the Ribbono Shel'Olam, however, wanted Klal Yisrael to recognize who he is, he therefore took
the second greatest phenomenon in world history that was never done before, and that was the miracles that surrounded the whole concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which took place for Yud Beis Chodesh, the Mishnah says. And it wasn't just the ten plagues. So when the Haggadah, they take those 10 plagues, they make them into many more than just 10 plagues. So the fact of the matter is, Klal Yisrael, millions and millions of men, women, children, witness firsthand the incredible capacities of Hashgacha Pratis, of Yedias Hashem, of the things that were going on below, that the Egyptians and their people were inflicted with makos of all types, and the Jews who were living next door were immune to these makos. There was no impact upon their person, no impact upon their homes, no impact even upon their animals. So they saw Hashgacha Pratis, they saw natural law being manipulated in front of their eyes. So they experience the Rabbanu Shalom with his incredible capacities of the Metzias Hashem and Yedias Hashem and Yecholas Hashem. They saw it firsthand. So the Rabbanu Shalom felt by therefore introducing himself with seeing the deity with these types of powers was a much more powerful way of introducing himself. But then says the Ramban that once Klal Yisrael were able to see the level of Shinui HaTeva, which the Rabbanu Shalom was able to do, we can then take Klal Yisrael to the next level through that and say, well, if you can mishana teva and change teva and change natural law and manipulate it on the level that you manipulated for millions upon millions of people doing things that were never done before in world history before and never done afterwards, then to say that this Rabbanu Shalom therefore was able to create this natural law and create the universe is more believable, more provable, and something which is more able to be digested. So therefore says the Ramban, the Rabbanu Shalom only introduced himself as the creator of the world, but he did it with the Metzius that people experienced in this world, and from that experience we can work backwards and say, if he can change natural law, manipulate natural law, that means he created the natural law initially speaking. It's not an independent entity outside God as the Gaish world thought. And if that's the case, through the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience, we come to believe in Hashem being the Borei Olamim. That is why I want you just to know, historically and halachically, the Gemara says in Masechtas Brachos on Daf Chaf Amud Beis, that when it comes to the themes of Zachar that we have on the night of Shabbos Kodesh, that in the Zechira, Zechus Yom Shabbos Akadsho, which is the makar for the mitzvah of Kiddush, not only in Kiddush Rabbi Yisai do we have the theme of Masa Bereishis, because Chazal say whoever says Kiddush with Vayechulo Friday night is being made an Edus, that the Rabbanu Shem created the world in 6 days, and rested Kaviyachal on the seventh. In the theme, you were there for theme, you think that the exclusive theme in Shabbos should be Masa Bereishis, which primarily it is, but it also says in the Kiddush, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Gemara says that that is a deraisachi, of the same way the Mitzvah Zecher requires the theme of Bria to be mentioned. On a deraisa level, the chi of Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be mentioned. Why? So they refer to this Ramban over here. Because our ultimate belief in the Rabbanu Shalom being able to say that he is the creator of the universe, which was not witnessed by human beings, even Adam HaRishon, is only brought to the fore and understood because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So in the theme of giving Eidus on Briyas Olam, Yetzias Mitzrayim played an integral part in bringing us to the understanding and comprehension of that. And that's why there's a Chi of Deraisa to mention both themes. If in Friday Night Kiddush I only mention Briyat Olam, and I don't mention Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, I am not Yotze the Mitzvah Kiddush Deraisa. That's why the Mishnah Berurah brings down in his Bir Halacha in Reish Ayin Aleph in Hilchus Shabbos,
he brings down that in the shul, when you daven Friday night, the big question everybody asks is, since you're mentioning themes of Bria to Olam, so why, when the husband comes home to make Kiddush, why is it that he himself, if he daven Ma'ariv, wasn't he yotze the mitzvah deraisa of Zachar? His wife, who usually doesn't daven Ma'ariv, has not been yotze. So why isn't it more proper maybe that the wife maybe should make Kiddush on behalf of Hal Mishpacha? Because it just so happens that the mitzvah Zechira of Zachar, of Shabbos, men and women have a halachically 100% equality when it comes to the chiv of that specific Zman Grama based upon Gzeres HaKasos. So if that's because the Gemara says whoever's chayv in Shmira Shabbos is chayv in Zechira Shabbos. And since women are chayv in all the Los Asays, they're chayv, the Gemara says, therefore in the Asay of Zachar. So the answer given by the Mishnah Berurah b'shem Rabbi Akiva Eiger is very simple. He says when the husband in Shul davens Ma'ariv, the only themes he's dealing with primarily are themes of Bria to Olam. So if that's the case, the husband has not been yotzei zechiya of Kiddush Deraisa in Shul when it comes to talking about the themes of Bria to Olam. It's only when he comes home on Kiddush or Friday night that there he has mentioned also Zeich L'tzias Mitzrayim, that that theme is also mentioned. So therefore, when the husband comes home from shul, he's still chayiv deraisa in Kiddush, the same way his wife is chayiv in chiyuv Kiddush deraisa. So therefore, the normal procedures we have, that the man's motzei the woman, because he basically has the same chiyuv she does, is therefore appropriate halachic etiquette. But people should realize and understand that this is a major yesod, and the Ramban over here alludes to it, the Kitzah Nimratz, and the Mefarshim of Shevelma on the bottom of the page brings down that the Ramban purposely did this to give his opinion of the Ibn Ezra Yehuda Halevi discussion which existed historically before him. Why not mention he's Bari Alamim? Because the answer is Yitzias Mitzrayim, we were Edom Ne'amanim, we saw it, we witnessed it, and that brings us to the belief in everything else. So this is what the Ramban defines hashkafically, Anoch Hashem Elokecha. What is the meaning, Mibeis Avodim? So says the Ramban, going back now to Rabbi Yisai, to quotation 2c, Shehoyu Omdim in Mitzrayim, Mibeis Avodim, Shvuyim LeParo. We were captives in Paro's Melucha, for Amalahem, Shehem Chayavin Shia Hashem Agoda Nichba Vanora Hula Lokim Shiavdu. They went from being Avodim of Paro to Avodim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, when I was teaching you the concepts of Hallel before Pesach, I quoted you a Talmud Yerushalmi. And the Talmud Yerushalmi I quoted made the following statement: that after Makkos Becharos, Paro became, literally, he became freaked out because Paro realized he was also Bechar. And therefore he started running out of the palace saying, where is Moshe and Aaron's abode? I must speak to them, I must speak to them. And the fact of the matter is, you know, his request for Moshe Aaron was to pray to God that he as a Bechar should not be killed with Machas Bechar. It's the same way his firstborn died in the palace in the most protected room in the entire empire. It didn't save his son. So Chazal point out that Paro said to Moshe and to Aaron, I'm now going to acquiesce to the request you made for me. And this is the Lashon Yerushalmi. Al achshav atem avdei Paro, mikan v'elech atem avdei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That now you're going from being avodim for me to avodim of the Rabbanu Shalom. So says the Ramban over here, the Ramban is playing upon this, that we have to therefore, since Hashem took us out of avdus and brought us unto his malchus, ki hu podosam, Hashem redeemed us, mi avdus Mitzrayim, v'tam avdehem asher tzesus ameret Mitzrayim. Therefore you went from, as Paro himself admitted, from the avdus of Paro to the avdus of Hashem, etc., etc. Furthermore, Chazal tell us this concept of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, if you look on the second line, this is the mitzvah which Chazal called, with Divrei Rabbi Seinu, Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim, accepting upon some Malchus Shamayim. There is a group of six mitzvahs which the Achrayim bring down and the Rishayim bring down, that a Jew has to be mekayem each and every day, and one of them is Kabbalas Olmach Shemayim. And when do we do that? What part of davening? So Chazal say, when we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad every day in davening, both in the morning and in the evening, not only are we mekayim the mitzvah say of Kriya Shema, which has to be recited twice daily, but we should have a secondary kavanah. And that secondary kavanah is by saying the Shema Yisrael, we mekayim upon ourselves all Malchus Shemayim, each and every day twice by the recitation of that pasuk. So we have multiple kavanas when we say that pasuk, to mekayim the mitzvah of Kriya Shema and to mekayim Malchus Shemayim. Just you should know halachically and hashkafically, that is why something quite interesting has happened when it comes, especially in modern Klal Yisrael, and when it comes, especially girls going to Torah schools and seminaries, is that even though a girl is technically exempt from the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, because it's a mitzvah seisha zman grama, and the Mishnah says it's explicitly mesachtes brachos, they tell the girls, nevertheless, say Kriya Shema each and every day. Why? Because you might be technically exempt from the Kriya Shema, but you're not exempt from Kabbalas or Malchus Shemayim. So therefore, when you say Kriya Shema, what you're doing, at least when you're saying at least once in the morning, because they don't tell the girls after Daven Maariv, is it be mekabel upon yourself or Malchus Shemayim. So once you're already saying the Pasuk Rishon and you mekabel, so you might as well basically finish off the Kriya Shema and say the other parts, because the bare minimum is, if you do that, you get schar ein mitzvah isa on a mitzvah seisha zman grami apata from, so you'll get schar for doing that as well, since you're bothering to say the Kriya Shema. So if that's the case with Rabbi Yisai, we are mekayim this mitzvah each and every day, and the source of the mitzvah Kabbalah is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hezkarti Shom, B'melech Keneged Am, V'chein Armu B'milchilta. Chazal tell a very interesting story in the Mechilta, which is the Medrash Halacha and Haggadah on Sefer Shmos. It says, "Lo yiluch alhim b'chaim alpana." We're going to come soon to the Lo Saseh. V'lama nemar. Why was Hashem giving us a Lo Saseh besides the Asay? The Fisha who Omer Anuch Hashem Alakecha Moshul Amelach Shenichnas LeMedina. The Medrash quotes, a king came into a specific land tract. Amalo Avadov, Geizer Aleinu Gezeros, King, you're coming in, you're taking over, make for us rules and regulations that we will live by under your authority. So Amalohem, so the king said to them, Lav Kishitakabla Malchusai, Exalechem Gezeros, I'm not going to basically speaking, I'll give you any Gezeros unless you accept my Malchus first. Shem Malchusa Eina Mekablim. If you're not Mekablim my Malchus, the king says, Zerosa Eichatem Mekaimin. What's going to give you the impetus to observe my rules and regulations? Kach Oma Hamakam Yisrael. Anocha Hashem Elokecha Layelecha. Anihu Shikibalta Malchusa Aleichem. You first have to Mekablim upon yourself all Malchus Shemayim, as you did in Mitzrayim. From Elohein Kishedekablim Malchusa. That once you're willing to makabo my malchus and recognize me as your king, as your chief in command, then giving you mitzvahs and gezeros makes sense. Kolomar, acha shetem makabo malechem umodim shani hashem ani alchem eretz Yisrael kibulu kol mitzvosai. For Nemru, now another phenomenon. Nemru kol adibros kulam balashin yachid. What's interesting, if you look carefully, most of the Aseret Dibros was said Baloshim Yachid, not Baloshim Rabin. Why did the, if Hashem was speaking to 3 million men, women, children, Har Sinai, why did he address them in the plural? So says the Rambam when it comes to that, Hashem Elokech Asher Seisicha Merim, Asher Seisicha Elokech Asher Hizchilem, Atem Isam Kim Hashemayin Dibarti Mechem. In the narrative of the Chumash, the Yabtid of Aseret Dibros, he spoke to Klal Yisrael in the plural because he was talking to millions of people. Shema Tishmu Lahazi. So what's the reason when it came to Aseret Dibros he switched to the Yachid? Lahazik kol yochid mehem yonish ala mitzvos kim kol echad yedabel kol echad yitzavish ol yachshvu ki acharov yelech v'hayochid yenatzol mehem v'yivulem izem esas kabasal p'tara pashas etem nitzavim.
What the Rebbe wanted them to realize is that you are at Har Sinai not just be mekabel Torah as a communal acharayas, as klayas, a corporate acharayas, but you're mekabel Hashem and mitzvahs on a personal level. You can't hide yourself and say, well, if Rav and Klaus are observing Torah mitzvahs, I'll sneak in and I'll benefit from what the Tzibah is doing. He purposely made the Asar Sedibros address them on the personal for them to realize everybody is achroi, everybody is responsible for their own positive and negative actions when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs. There's a chiyuv hayachid besides the chiyuv hatzibur, and that's why certain things were written by Taras Yachid in order to bring home this specific point itself.
So we therefore see, Rabbi says so far, that from this specific Ramban, what the Pasuk in Hashem Kecha teaches us on a hashgafic level. Now, let's start a little bit going into the next Pasuk. You shouldn't have any other gods before you. So I want you to turn out to page 3 and get to the Ramban's part, where the Ramban now comes to explain the Hemshech HaPsukim. So in the book on page 3, where it says 3a in the text, you should see a little a on the side, and in that a, on that a, the Ramban says V'hanocham, the appropriate pshat of Lo Yilecha is the following hezbel. Listen very carefully. Gav lefi apshat shu meloshin v'hoya Hashem li lelokim, the God should be for me a God. L'yos lechem lohim, he should be for you for a God. Yomer, what is it coming to teach us? Shlo yilanu bilti Hashem elokim acherim mikol malachem malo. This is interesting. He points out, based upon Tanakh literature, Malachim are many times called Balashim Elokim. They're called Balashim Elokim. Elokim means they have tremendous divine power given to them by the Rabbanu Shalom, and they use this divine power to execute the Shlichusim given to them by the Rabbanu Shalom when it comes to dealing with the universe in which we exist. So the Rabbanu Shalom, when the Rabbanu Shalom says, you shouldn't have any other gods before me, what the Rabbanu Shalom is really saying is, don't decide that besides the Rabbanu Shalom, to start worshipping angels, Mikol Tzva Shemayim, who are called Elohim. They might have higher power there is of the rest of the universe, but they're not the deity, they're not the Rabbanu Shalom. Ke'inyin Shenevni, quotes the Pasuk, Zoveach Lelokim Yecharam Bilti Lashem Levado. Whoever decides to slaughter animals to the Elohim, which means to angels, will be utterly destroyed by Hashem. You only should slaughter to the Rabbanu Shalom exclusively. V'himeniya, this is therefore a lav. Shlo yamin be'echet mehem. We shouldn't believe in angel worship, as does apply in many types of religions. V'lo yikablu alav beloka. We're now allowed to makab on ourselves an angel as our God. V'lo yomulo eliyata. You can't say to an angel, you are my God. V'chein das unkelis. He says, if you look at the Targum Unkelis on the Pasuk, Shenemar Elohei Ocharon Barmini, don't have any other gods besides me, which means entities of divine power. Vida, and you should know the following point. This is interesting. Ki b'chol makom sh'om ha'kasav Elohim Acherim. Anytime you find the Torah saying there shouldn't be any Elohim Acherim besides me, ha'kavana ba'acherim zulasi Hashem nechbat. You shouldn't have any other divine entities with divine power except the Rabbanu Shalom. V'yitvus zehaloshan bekabalas alakus. It means accepting as a divine entity to worship. That's what's being referred to over here. O ba'avoda, or doing not only having a faith commitment to this other type of divine essence, a malech, in belief, but even ba'avodalo, doing various types of divine services to him. Ki loma ki yomar, lo sekablu aleichem eloka, don't accept upon yourself God's godness, ekbilti lashon levado, only God as God, but not any other type of divine power created by God as malachim. Avo kishidabi basia, this is interesting. When it comes to making idols, says the Rambam, lo yomar b'kosev acherim. When it comes to making idols, you don't have the word acherim. Chalila. Why? Because if you had, don't make any other elohim acherim in making, it would seem to appear that somebody made God. So when it comes to making God, it never uses the word acherim. Avo yomru elohim asecha lo sasu lechem. Elohim asecha lo sasu lecha. V'yikrein kein bavur sheyasa b'kavana leos elokav. People who make idols make it to worship these idols. We'll see later on where that came into. Avo behem omar kasuf. Kilo elohim elohim heimar. That these are not gods. Kimase de adam. They're merely creations of human beings. Eitz ve'evan v'yavdein. They're made of wood, they're made of stone, and they should be destroyed. V'hinei hizir b'dibor hasheni, which the Rabbanu Shem prohibited in the second dibor, techila shlo nekabel on the adam mikol elokim. We should not accept upon ourselves any gods except the Rabbanu Shalom. V'achakach, and afterwards, Omar Shalonasa peso, that we shouldn't make any physical types of objects representing God, the Chotmuna, Lishtachuslam, to bow down to them, for Lola of them, or to worship them, Bashum Avedishaba Olam, Ulakach Omar. That's why we're now on top of page 3, where it says H, Lo Shishtachulam, don't bow down to them, Kunismach Alasia. Don't make these molten images, these idols, to bow down to them. Shemana osa mishtachavos lehem. That the Rebbeinu Shem says bowing down to them alone is a sacrilegious activity. V'nei kulam ashara mavedazara. All of these are asharos when it comes to different forms of idolatry. Kulan chayava misos. If you do any of these things, if you say to another entity, Eliata, you're a vile, and you do this in front of Edim, Yechai Mises Bezdin. The actual Isra of making idols itself is not really derived from this Pasik, Shola Avdom, Avolamater. Later on it says, Elohei Kesev Lekezav Lo Sasu Lechem. There's a special Pasik. Gods of silver and gold you shouldn't make for you. V'chein alahem masecha lo sas lechem elilim. So we see over here, Rabbi Yisai, that there's separate psukim talking about manufacturing idols. In our first couple of psukim in the Chumash, even though it mentions idols, it's not referring to their manufacture, it's referring to doing divine services of God on behalf of those things. And any divine service of God that you do on behalf of any type of idolatry, physical or spiritual, whatever, if you basically do an Aveda, any of the Avedas that are done in the Beis Hamikdash is the classic example, Yeshech, do Nisach Hayayin, Mekabel Dam, whatever is done as an Aveda Sakab and you do for an idol, even if you didn't make that idol, with Hasor Yechayiv Mises Bezdim, saying to any type of object that in this world might be worshipped by the Goyim as idolatry, Eliata, even though you didn't do any physical act, is enough with Hasra to Mechayiv Mises Bezdim. When it says, Alpanai, what do you mean in front of me? So at the end of the time, the Rashbam says, the Ramban says, what is the meaning of Alpanai mean? It means that Rabbeinu Shem says that since I have my divine presence all over the world, if you think you could hide your idolatrous activities from the Rabbeinu Shalom, you're making a very big mistake. You can't hide that.
You can't do it secretively. You can't hide it from me. And therefore realize that even if you try to hide it, it says in quotation, I. He says, in Omolo Sazo Elohim Acherim Shanim Simcha Tomid Rayasa Besesa Ubegalui. I see what you do in the hidden resources of your life, in the open resources of your life, etc., etc. Now, what is interesting, Rabbi Yisai, and this is something the Ramban points out, is that one of the terms that the Torah uses when it shows that Hashem's feeling upset by you worshiping Avodah Zarah is the concept of nekama, of Hashem feeling kana'us. You know, Hashem will be mekana. And the concept of kinui, Rabbi Seven, kana, where else do you find that in the Torah?
Yes.
But where else? What area?
By what's him? Adultery.
Adultery. By Sota.
Kinei, sisto.
So says the Ramban, that the unique term that Rabbi Hashem uses to show he's upset with people who worship idolatry rather than him is a term used when it comes to breaking the intimate relationship that exists between a husband and a wife. You know, so basically speaking, if a person, a husband and a wife, commit adultery against each other, so there the word kina is used to show a break of a fidelity, a relationship of intimacy of the highest level. If a person worships idolatry, Hashem Kelkana, Hashem wants to show using terms, Dibatav Lashem Ani Adam, what's being violated by this type of activity. Now, where we're going to go from over here, Rabbi Yisai, is the following. What I want you now to basically realize is that we are, I just want to see something over here. I see something very strange. One second. What I see over here is, I believe there's a page that might be missing in the Makaros. There's a whole page I think that's missing, at least in this one. Let me see from yours if it's missing by you. Which is the whole page that's missing here. Right, what I'm going to have to do, because I see now, without that page, I can't go to the next piece. What the Ramban then does, is the next piece, which by next week I'll have that piece for you that's missing over here, is he goes into an historical analysis of how idolatry began in the world. What took place? That after mankind, even Adam and Chavik, obviously, had discussions with the Rabbanu Shalom, they were given Nevuah capacities. So the initial generations of the world knew of Hashem on a very high, lofty level. They were close to Briyas Olam. How in the world did the world slowly but surely start to fall and literally bring themselves into idolatrous practices? What took place? How could it happen? At what stage of world history did people start to worship idolatry? And what type of idolatry? What I'm going to show you next week in Mirtzashem is that the Ramban has his thesis of how it began. I have in this little kuntres, the Rambam has his thesis, and I'm going to compare the theses because you're going to see very quickly that there are major differences between the Ramban and the Rambam in how they present the arena of the world into idolatry. Each one's going to say what they're going to say, as I'm going to show you, based upon their understanding of the functionality of how Hashem does Hashkacha Pratis in this world. And are Malachim involved in that Hashkacha Pratis? Are the concept of astrology, stars, Kochavim Mazalot, do they have a certain power God gave them to control through astrology what happens to people below in this world as part of Hashem's Hashkach Sa'olam? Depending upon whether you're a Rambam Niker or a Ramban Niker, you're going to come to different conceptual analysis, and I'm going to show you insight into their respective texts, how each one explains the Yerida from Achdus HaBari to idolatry, But each one does it in a way according to their respective opinion when it comes to what powers Hashem gave to Malachim, what powers Hashem gave to Chacham Hazalos, and depending upon whose sheet you're going with, you're going to come up with a different maskana. One thing I will tell you just as a little hakdama is that there's a big difference in the way the Rambam used to daven to the Rabbanu Shalom in contrast to many of the Mukubalim and the Kabbalists, and that is, do we petition to Malachim in our davening that they should hear our tefillos and bring the tefillos in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? For the Rambam, if you ever attempted that, that is sacrilegious, that might even be idolatrous. In his mind, you can never address any tefillos to Malachim. And that's why, interesting enough, if you ever looked at an art scroll machzer, he will say to you, or what they produce, they'll say that if you are part of the Rambam camp, don't mention these Malachim's names.
Kiyah Shofar, the angels.
Or by Duchening, in one of the passages, by Parnassa, there's a whole bunch that you have basically in parentheses over there. If you're a Rambaniker or a Mekubal, they did believe that Malachim did serve a function as being emissaries to bring tefillos to the Rabbanu Shalom. So for them, if a Malach was given that capacity, Hashem wanted that capacity to exist, saying their names would not be a sacrilegious thing. But I want you to realize this is a major, major machlokes, the Peledika machlokes. So there's going to be a lot of good stuff that we have coming the next couple of weeks. I think I'm going to keep your appetite very, very busy. But we'll start from where we left off in the Ramban. I'm going to throw this at that page because you're missing it.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.